Schools, elections, and public affairs committee to order. And we have one item on our agenda this morning. It is SBR 6. Proposing an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to create the office of Lieutenant Governor. And today we have Butch Otter, the Lieutenant Governor from Idaho, has graciously agreed to come over and visit with us today about the duties of Lieutenant Governor in the great state of Idaho. And Mr. Otter, introduce yourself to the record and go ahead.
I'm C.L. Butch Otter, Lieutenant Governor of the state of Idaho, and Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate very much the opportunity to come over here and to Oregon and explain to you what I think the virtues are of the office of Lieutenant Governor. I want to tell you in advance that I'm probably not speaking for everybody in Idaho, because there are probably some in Idaho that would rather that we didn't have an office of Lieutenant Governor, and I'll admit that right up front. I say that in jest, but I think in some circles within the state it would also be in earnest. But I would like to give you a little bit of background as to my experience in the office of Lieutenant Governor. I did serve in the state legislature from 1972 to 1976 as a member of the House of Representatives from Canyon County, which is a primarily an agricultural county within the state. Did not run again in 1976, left voluntarily. There are only two-year terms in Idaho for the House of Representatives and the State Senate. However, the office of Lieutenant Governor and all other constitutional officers is 4 years. In 1986, I worked prior to that time while I was in the legislature, and up until 1986, I worked for the J.R. Simplot Company, which is a company that Oregon also enjoys a plant or two around the Hermiston area. In fact, I was a member of the company strategic planning committee and a officer in the food division when we built the Hermiston plant, which I think you all know is
Donald French Tractor.
Primarily built, that's the reason it was built, was to supply McDonald's with the required high grade of French fry that they require all over the world. I might also add as a personal note that that plant did fulfill its mission in that when that plant was built, McDonald's was building a new restaurant someplace in the world, opening the doors on a new restaurant someplace in the world about every 2 days. And today it's every 13 hours. So someplace in the world, twice today practically, McDonald's will open a new restaurant. And I have to tell you, it's been the French fry from the Pacific Northwest and Idaho and Oregon in particular that had caused that to happen. At any rate, up until that time, I was the president of Simplot International, and Idaho was facing some pretty serious problems, economic problems within the state, and so that is why I decided that Lieutenant Governor, which is a part-time office in the state of Idaho, paid. At that time, I think it paid about $14,000 a year. It now pays about $22,000 a year. I'm not suggesting that, John. I just mentioned it. But it was interesting because the two prior lieutenant governors before myself both indicated after they had completed their single four-year terms that it would be a good office to get rid of. And one of the reasons I think that they felt that way is that the office was not functionally meritorious for the state. There was nothing done with the office. Under the Constitution, and I see under this bill that's before us, under the Constitution, there are two primary duties of the office of Lieutenant Governor in the state of Idaho. First is obviously the first in succession in case something should happen to the governor. Second, in Idaho, is that I am the president of the Senate. Unlike the Senate here in Oregon, the president of the Senate is the president of the whole Senate and elected by the entire state, because it is the lieutenant governor. And the only time I get to vote, now I'm there, my primary responsibility is to make sure that one of the 35 senators get to be heard on each and every issue. No matter whether they come from the largest and strongest, economically most viable district within the state, or the smallest and perhaps least capable of defending itself. Each senator represents the same number of people and have an equal right to be heard. So my primary responsibility is to enforce the rules equally. Although I'm Republican, I think you would find that any minority leader, any Democrat leader of the state Senate during my term of office will tell you that they have had equal treatment. In fact, in many cases, treatment that they even themselves may have admitted time to time that they didn't expect to, nor felt like they deserved. But that is the only other constitutional responsibility of the lieutenant governors. Number one, as you provide for in this bill, succession to the governor's office. Let me speak to that, and I'll not say anything more about the president's intent because you don't speak to that in this bill. To the question of succession in office, I can tell you that when the governor leaves the state of Idaho, I become the chief executive of the state. Under the first governor of which I served from 1986 to 1994 was Governor Cecil Andrus. He was a Democrat. And even though I was a Republican, Governor Andrus and I enjoyed a very good relationship. It was one of high level of confidence. He was never apprehensive about leaving the state, as you might have heard some of the horror stories from some of the other states, and I'm familiar with a couple of those, California and Texas, where when the governor left, the lieutenant governor was left to, up to a bunch of mischief, and subsequently cabinet members were changed, National Guards were called out, in some cases judges were appointed. It's always been my belief, and I would hope that it would be the sense and the belief of your lieutenant governor, that the chief executive has a right to his own team. No matter how much you may enjoy a difference of opinion with that person, they have a right to their own team. They were the ones elected chief executive of the state. If you want to exercise those kinds of powers uninhibited by the person who actually holds that office, then run for it yourself. Run for the office of governor yourself. And that's what I've always believed. I've served under Governor a Democrat administration for 8 years, and thus far under Republican administrations for 6. I enjoyed good confidence and good relationships with both of those. I had mentioned to John earlier, Senator Lim earlier, that if it were my preference, in fact, one of the things that I'm trying to do now is to change the Constitution of the state of Idaho so that the governor and lieutenant governor run on the same ticket. And my reason for that is I've served under both. I've served under the opposite party, and even though I enjoyed a good relationship with Governor Andrus, I really felt like it was much easier for 4 years under Governor Batt, who was a Republican, and continues to be under Governor Tim Kern, who is a Republican. There's less suspicion, although I've never been up to any mischief, and we've never had any sort of problems, as I had mentioned before, in some of the other states. It just is also, seems to me, that when the people elect a governor of a particular party, they elect a philosophy. They have a right to see that that philosophy is enjoyed by the state for the full 4-year term. I suspect that philosophy would have a better chance of surviving if for that 4-year term, if they were both of the same party, than rather if they were opposite parties. Also, as I stated earlier, it's my belief that a chief executive has a right to his own team. I could see if governor of one party, for whatever reason, left that office, and a lieutenant governor of an opposite party took that office, that he also has a right to his own team. And so there would be substantial personnel changes, and then disruptions in philosophy, disruptions in administration. And so that's the only reason that I would mention that I think it would be better if they were both of the same party. Going down through the section on the duties of lieutenant governor, I also mentioned earlier in discussions that in Idaho's constitution, the only responsibilities that are delineated for the lieutenant governor is the succession clause of the section of the constitution and the president of the Senate clause for the constitution. Although we're not talking about the president of the Senate of the clause for the Constitution here, I had indicated earlier it is my preference, as it in the state of Idaho, to see these other duties that are delineated in here, actually in the code, in state code, where they could be where they could be modified, where they could be monitored, where they could be changed a little bit. Should an administration, for instance, a governor, enjoy a lieutenant governor that has a tremendous ability to do something the state needs in terms of at a particular time, it would be a lot easier than to allow the lieutenant governor, for instance, to focus on that function within the state. And if you happen not to delineate it in this constitutional requirement, it would be almost impossible to change. And as you all know, when we take the oath of office, we take the oath of office to uphold the Constitution of our respective states in all manners whatsoever. So, however, it is being put in the Constitution here, and it's probably broad enough in perspective that it may not be necessary to find it only in the code and not in the Constitution. As the lieutenant governor of the state of Idaho, the only mention that there is of my duties in the code falls under the Idaho Code Section 18 title, and it says simply, the lieutenant governor shall do those duties and responsibilities as so directed to the governor. Now, that's dangerous in some cases, but broad enough to embrace any and all possibilities. It just happened that because I was an international trade a specialist and the president of the International Development Agribusiness Development Company, Governor Andrus at that time in 1986 saw fit to put me in charge of international trade and expand that for the state. How does that benefit the state, and why couldn't the governor himself do that, and why couldn't somebody else for the state do it? I think, as you know, out of 180-plus countries of the world, most of them are centrally planned economies. You get nothing done in another country unless you can go government to government. Governments in those countries generally recognize high government officials. Now, that's not to say that they wouldn't recognize one of yourselves or a fellow senator as a high government official. But I can tell you that if they know that you've been elected by the entire state, by the population, I have an entire marketplace behind me representing all aspects of the state. We have 44 counties in the state of Idaho. We have 14,000 companies and corporations that produce products and services. And when I go into Korea or Japan or the Asians or one of those, they know I'm representing the entire state because I was elected by the entire state. It also finds me in a place where I enjoy being able to approach the threshold of whether it's the president of the country, the king of the country, or the queen of the country in a couple of cases, or the highest ranking government official. And it gives me a one-on-one peerage with those people who are going to make the decisions about that international trade agreement. I've negotiated trade agreements under subchapters of NAFTA, of Canadian Free Trade, subsections of GATT, all for the state of Idaho. I was only able to do that because I was recognized as a ranking government official who was elected by my entire state. All people in the state of Idaho had approved that I should do this for them. So, in the question of serve as a member of the International Trade Commission, I can see where that's terribly important. Some people would make the argument, well, why can't the governor do that? I can tell you that as important as the world economy is today, Oregon is only one of 49 other states that we enjoy sister and brotherhood relationships with to capture some of those same markets. You can't do that on a part-time basis. You have to have somebody that's ready to receive the trade mission when it's coming from the foreign host country into your host state, or when you're going to take a trade mission to a foreign country. You need to be able to do that, and you need to be able to move, in some cases, on a moment's notice. Also, the governor, by the way, our international trade went from $700 million in 1986, with some 90 companies from Idaho participating in that, the Simplot company we talked about earlier being one of those, to this year, about $2.3 billion, of which over 700 companies are now participating in international trade. 700 Idaho companies are now participating in international trade. To serve on the Oregon Economic Development Commission, I don't know exactly what the mission of that is, but if it's the economic, if it's the retention of corporations within your state, it's retaining them in the state and enlarging their opportunities within the state, or if it's to get new corporate citizens to come into the state and create tax structure, putting brick and mortar together, and opportunities for people to make products that can later be shipped throughout the United States and throughout the world. That's what our Department of Commerce does. And as a partner in the Department of Commerce, I also carry on those responsibilities and representation for the Department of Commerce, not only in the state of Idaho, but in our sister state relationships with other states, and in country-to-country relationships, sister state and other country relationships with other countries of the world, such as Mexico. I have represented many times the governor of the state of Idaho in executive negotiations on interstate multi-state tax compacts. Some of those need a great deal of attention, and it's more attention than the chief executive can afford to give with all the other duties and responsibilities that the chief executive has. And so I, quite frankly, have signed an interstate tax compact agreement with the state of Oregon. I signed one with the state of Washington, California, with Nevada, and Wyoming, and Montana. I've signed interstate agreements on transportation agreements, weight limits, safety requirements, interstate transportation of dangerous and hazardous material, many of those things. I was the last high-ranking state official to go to Albuquerque, New Mexico, to finalize the approval for the shipment of transuranic nuclear waste from Idaho INL site to Carlsbad and the permanent location down there for the storage of the transuranic nuclear waste. So the involvement of those duties and responsibilities is terribly important. Once again, you're looked on in that status and that as a peer if you're elected by the entire state and hold the constitutional responsibility as designed by this Senate resolution. So I can attest to the value of being able to do that, not only in terms of being online and ready to represent the state and the governor at his request, but also giving the governor then the peace of mind that he doesn't have to be there to dot every I and cross every T. Cooperate with state and local government agencies to promote and encourage economic development throughout the state. I think I've done that. I think I've already spoke to that question. It's been terribly important in the state of Idaho. 1986, our total economy was $15.4 billion. Today, it's $32 billion. It's been tremendous growth. And I'm certainly not going to take all the credit for that, but during because it is an election year and I got one coming up, I would like to be able to take all the credit for that. But it's terribly important for the Departments of Commerce and the Department of Agriculture and these other entities that are online and on risk for their credibility and in many cases for their bank accounts. To see that a constitutional officer in the personage of the lieutenant governor, who is the direct representative of the governor, and they're behind them, it makes a great deal of difference to the capital resource people, the bankers that may come out for the ribbon cutting or may come out for digging the hole in the ground or whatever, to see that there are people in high-ranking positions that are direct representatives of the entire state that are prepared to go online and say this is a good thing. So economic development and the encouragement of same can be a terribly important function for this office. Serving as acting governor, I average about 55 days a year as acting governor. Out of any year under Governor Andrus, it was probably a little less than that, probably 45. But I can tell you, because I think Governor Kim Thorne, having been a United States Senator and having some key focuses for himself relative to the 10th Amendment, unfunded mandates, endangered species, forced health, and those sort of things, has spent a great deal of time and subsequent attention in Washington, D.C., working on those things. And so I have served as acting governor of the state of Idaho probably more days in the first 6 months of the Kim Thorne administration than I normally would in the first 2 years of another governor. How important is it that you have a acting governor and acting chief executive? If you've ever had a forest fire and have to declare a disaster area, in order to marshal the forces and the assets that are necessary to attack that forest fire, you cannot do that without the declaration of a major disaster, because then that gives liability insurance, that gives liability immunity to the local fire department to take their truck and go on federal or state land and fight a fire. Gives you the opportunity to call out the National Guard and employ their assets against that same whatever damage there might be being created either by the forest fire or the floods. And I have declared disasters in 11 of Idaho's 44 counties for either flood or fire. Unfortunately, not at the same time. I probably wouldn't have had to press the disaster if we'd had flood and fire going on at the same time. But it's important that you have somebody that is left at the state chief executive level when the governor is out of the state for all of those reasons that I've stated relative to declaring disasters, being able to call out the National Guard, those sort of things. But it's also equally important on an international trade basis, because the governor can't always decide when he has to go to Washington, D.C. or when he has to be called out of the state for something else. If that international trade group comes in and they're looking for 168,000 tons of soft white meat, as has been the case recently in the past of Idaho, the governor was called out of the state, but the chief executive was still there to meet the Chinese delegation, and we were quite successful in our efforts there. So that, in a nutshell, I can use my experience to tell you why I think the office of lieutenant governor is important, and I think that's why most of the states have a lieutenant governor. I guess unless there's something else I can provide.
Mr. Gardner has a question for you. I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions. You were talking about your design as the president of the Senate.
Yes.
Are you allowed to cast tie-breaking votes?
Only.
Okay.
Only tie-breaking votes, Representative Gardner and Mr. Chairman. And in 100 years, Idaho celebrated its centennial in 1990. We became the 43rd star in the American flag in 1890. And it wasn't until 1990 that we actually had 21 Republicans and 21 Democrats in the state Senate. That's when we had 42 instead of 35. And I cast tie-breaking votes for all of 90 and 91 sessions. I cast more votes by myself in the first 2 weeks of the 1990 session than all 36 lieutenant governors put together before we cast. That's the first time that ever had a tie in the representation within the Senate. Now, there had been ties where perhaps a equal number of Democrats crossed over and an equal number of Republicans crossed over the other way. There had been a few ties, but never to the magnitude that we had in the 1991 session.
Just to continue, Mr. Chair, if I could, you say you act as the governor in the when he's out of the state. Does that include, is there any limitations to it? I mean, can you literally sign bills into law or veto them?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, yes, you have full executive power. I have full executive power. If there were an intent to limit that to the limitations that you could foresee might be necessary, but I have signed bills into law. I've vetoed bills that I didn't think were right. I have extradited prisoners. I never pardoned one. I was all one wanted to pardon, I guess. Was never asked to, is the best way to put it. But you have full executive powers.
So virtually, if I could continue, Mr. Lugar, virtually you could cast a tie-breaking vote, sign a bill as president of the Senate, and then sign it in as governor if the governor was out of the state, all three in a very rapid succession.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Gardner, that is exactly what happened in 1988. In 1988, if you'll recall, I'm sure you had to deal with here too, then Secretary of Transportation Elizabeth Dole, fostered and got through the United States Congress. A bill that said that if a state did not raise their drinking age from the age of, we were at 19 for beer and wine in Idaho then, to the age of 21 for all alcohol beverages, that Idaho in particular would lose $14 million in federal funds. I'm a state's rightist. I believe wholeheartedly in the 10th Amendment of the Constitution, the police power belongs to the state. So I listened to the arguments on the Senate floor as the president of the Senate. And every senator, although seeing some of the wisdom in raising the drinking age, described the fact that we were being blackmailed by the federal government. And so I was the president of the Senate. When the bill hit the governor's office, I was the acting governor. Governor Andrews was in Washington, D.C. at a national governor's conference. I vetoed the bill. And to my champion, Ronald Reagan, who had been my champion in states' rights when he was governor of the state of California, I wrote him a nice long letter and asked him what happened to him. Because that was a duty, a responsibility that truly I felt belonged to the state. Subsequently, when the governor got back, the legislature passed another bill raising the drinking age to 21, and we got our $14 million. But I think it gave us an opportunity. So that did happen. But I must tell you that this does not speak to that. This does not provide for the lieutenant governor acting as president of the Senate. That is left in place. So the question of separation of powers is not approached here. But I can tell you that my office, my official lieutenant governor's office, is on the second floor of the Capitol building. The legislature is on the third floor in the separate wing, Senate and House. Somewhere between my office and the 32 steps that I walk up to get to the legislative floor, I cease being the lieutenant governor of the state. And I'm the president of the Senate. Of course, I'm anyone. I descend those steps, I cease being the president of the Senate. I can exercise no legislative power, and I become lieutenant governor of the state. When I'm acting governor, I cannot legally go to the third floor without an invitation and go up and testify on my own bills sometimes that I have up there, unless somebody extends me an invitation to come up to a committee hearing and testify. But I cannot legally go to the third floor because of the separation of powers. But you don't have to worry about the separation of powers question here because you're not providing for a president of the Senate as a lieutenant governor.
President Gardner?
Yeah, it's more really a curiosity question more than anything else. Just, you mentioned that both lieutenant governor and the governor should be from the same party. Do you feel that they should be elected as running mates together, much as the president and vice president are?
I really haven't even thought about that Mr. President and Representative and Mr. Chairman and Representative Gardner. I really haven't thought about that in my own circumstances where I want to change the Constitution of the state of Idaho to provide that they run. In some states, it's provided that the governor or the highest, everybody runs for governor, and that the guy getting the most votes becomes the governor, and the person getting the second most votes becomes the lieutenant governor. Well, as you can see, as some of these campaigns get a little heated, and the debates subsequently a little heated, it'll be kind of tough to come back together and serve as a good team just because you've got one vote less than the guy who sits in the big chair, than the person who sits in the big chair. So I think the mechanics are something that's going to have to be worked out that best fits the state of Oregon. In Idaho, I think I would provide that they do run as a team, and they do run as a team after the primary. But it's a wide open primary, just like it is for governor. It'd be a wide open primary for governor and lieutenant governor, and you'd have to run for lieutenant governor. And then after the primary, whoever are the successful vote getters for the governor and lieutenant governor, they become the team and they run together.
Well, are you familiar with there was an interesting situation in Illinois several years ago with Adlai Stevenson III, where they actually do run that way, mm-hmm. and the lieutenant governor candidate was elected was actually a member of the LaRouche party who had changed his registration to Democrat just within the legal limits prior to that primary, and was the lieutenant governor selected. Wouldn't it create for more situations like that where the governor is actually running for the position, is forced to run with a teammate that he really can't possibly deal with?
Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Gerd, Representative Gerd, You know, I guess I can see that, but I also kind of feel like reasonable people who truly have the hope and the promise of their state in mind when they choose to run for these high offices, that their spirit will be moved to do the right thing, and that they are running for these offices with that high purpose in mind. I think any system, given the mischievous deeds of some people, and that's one of the parties that have been up sometimes to a lot of mischievous deeds, that's our system. And I guess I readily accept the disruption that they offer in the system, because I don't really know a better system for putting our representative government together.
Richard Edwards. You going to meet Mr. Chair?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for being here and giving us an overview of your role for Idaho. You know, and I have a couple of specific questions and then kind of give a statement. How many statewide constitutional officers does Idaho have?
Seven.
And when was the lieutenant governor founded, basically, when the state was founded?
1890.
Yeah. I think just as a statement, one of the problems for us addressing this today is in 1999 is every state has a tradition. Some, you know, you look at all states, they all have amalgamation of office holders. And maybe the case is described here by Senator Lim over what is needed in this state relative to these duties is justified. I can tell you, I think, as somebody who's in elected offices yourself, creating a brand new position is always tough. I mean, we're going to ask the voters, assuming this were to get to the floor and pass, to basically make a case that these duties aren't being met, because these are the ones that they're going to do primarily. You could make the case that, you know, we don't have the duty as described here, that there is a successor. I mean, this duty isn't, you're not a successor. And I got to say, I've been, Senator and I have maybe disagree over whether or not we're doing a good or bad job relative to these duties. Perhaps it's incumbent upon the governor more to take on some of these duties, particularly with international trade. Oregon has done very well, quite frankly. Maybe it could do a better job. I guess I'm anticipating the case to the voter, and I'm not asking you to necessarily comment on whether or not Oregon can take this on and pass it. And this is really more of a question to John, whether or not we can make that case. But I think just to put yourself in my shoes, which is, you know, today, the year 2000, nearly beginning of the millennium, whether or not we really do need to make another case to the voters for another statewide constitutional officer. We have three. They serve the state very well, have worked extremely well. The state's done incredibly well since the founding of it. So I guess I kind of stack that up against whether or not the duties are being met locally. I mean, I just sort of editorializing why this is it's a tough decision, because I'm not sure the voters, one, could understand, let alone this body, that we are, in essence, not meeting these functions. Because I think it'd be hard-pressed to take this to the voters and say, I mean, in theory, I think there's some argument for it, but whether or not we actually are not, you know, deficient in these areas, I think it would be a tough case to make. And that's really just sort of my position on this. It's a, as you know, more government isn't necessarily viewed as a positive, which is really what we're asking here. So if you want to comment on that, that's fine.
Mr. Chairman, with your permission,
my observations there.
And Representative Edwards, you know, one of the, there's a requirement of each generation, and we all have to kind of push the envelope a little bit, and there is some risk-taking that's involved. And I think in some of the agencies of state that we've created in Idaho and since the mid-'80s, in order to take on the magnitude of responsibilities that we think that we're going to enjoy, and part of those are coming back from the federal government, we've got a much larger role to play in our health and welfare system, a much larger role to play in the natural resource basis, and we want to play that role. We enthusiastically champion the idea of less federal involvement within our state matters and more involvement by leadership and providing leadership from within the state. And I'm not here to tell you. I'm a visitor, and I hope I'll be welcome back, whether this passes or fails, because I really quite enjoy the coast, especially. And now here, Karen.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm here to tell you that if Idaho did not have a lieutenant governor, it is my opinion that we would not be doing near the job in international trade that we're doing. We would not be doing near the job in economic development that we're doing. And it doesn't have to be Butch Otter as the lieutenant governor, but a high-ranking government official who has the confidence and who has the integrity of the state and who has the responsibility for economic development and international trade and international negotiations goes a long way toward convincing those peoples of the world, convincing those corporations that would expand within, that are already here and want to expand within the state, or that would come in from another state and lay their foundations for economic development, that a high-ranking government official is on their side and willing to champion the opportunities for them to do business within the state. It does sound primarily like an economic development or international trade, and I don't mean it to sound just that way, because left to the magic that marketplace itself can do, there's nobody that can do it better in my thinking than the private sector. But I also understand that there is not a J.R. Simplot company in Kuala Lumpur that I go talk to. I have to go talk to the Minister of International Trade. And he is not a corporation. He's a bureaucrat. And he's a high-ranking government official that wants to meet with a high-ranking government official.
Mm-hmm.
Just one last quick question. When you're as a successor, again, this bill doesn't contemplate that, but out of curiosity, when is it automatic that when the governor leaves the state, he has to or she has to designate you as the acting governor?
Notify me. The Constitution says I'll do it, just as this would. They just have to notify me when they're leaving.
So, just clarification, basically that anytime the governor leaves, you are automatically, by notification, the acting governor.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Edwards, that's true. And the Highway Patrol is notified. Who's my contact?
All of a sudden you have bodyguards.
No, Mr. Chairman and Representative Edwards, no, we went through that. No, I don't have bodyguards. We don't go quite that far.
Thank you.
This is Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My questions maybe are more for one state person than one for Governor Otter. We have Secretary of State who is next in line as governor. Do you have a similar office? You said you had 7 statewide elected officials. We actually have 5, not 3. But,
in the Constitution, we have 3.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Byer, we have a Secretary of State. Our 7, if you'd like me to bring in, are Governor, Lieutenant Governor, Secretary of State, Attorney General, Superintendent of Public Instruction, State Auditor, State Treasurer.
Okay. Very similar to others. Now, Senator Lim, and maybe you can answer this question, maybe. Currently, when our governor leaves the state, he still has the authority to do the things that were mentioned that a Senate governor does, such as declare emergencies, call it National Guard. Isn't that correct? The governor doesn't have to be physically in the state in order to do these duties. Is that correct?
Yes, correct.
Lieutenant Governor.
Just a couple of questions. Lieutenant Governor, in the 109 years of Idaho State, has a lieutenant governor ever become governor either by election or by the governor leaving office midterm?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Devin, by election, I think 3 times where the lieutenant governor actually ran for governor. By succession, it's been 3 times. Once in the case of death, once when the governor appointed himself to the United States Senate because of the death of the United States Senator, and once in my political life, when then-Governor Andrus, in 1976, joined the Carter administration as Secretary of Interior. And Lieutenant Governor Lieutenant Governor took over as the governor and then ran twice successfully for governor afterwards.
One other question. I don't want the chairman here to get ambitious, but could you give the current balance in the House and Senate in terms of Republican, Democrat, and Idaho?
We have 105 members in the Idaho State Legislature representing 35 legislative districts. That's two representatives for each district, one senator per district. We have 16 Democrats. 12 of those are in the House of Representatives, so there's 12 out of 70. There are four Democrats in the Senate. That's 4 of 35.
I'm in the Senate now.
I'm 4. You guys are so
privileged. I know.
Don't get too ambitious.
We're laughing because the numbers are a little different here in Northern. A little closer.
Well,
not much.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, there wasn't much closer than they can be than they were in 1990 and 91 when it was 21-21.
In the Senate.
In the Senate. And I might add, the Democrats of the Senate that year took me to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, I might also ask, which has been pretty well impaneled by Governor Andrus, who was a Democrat. And the Supreme Court ruled that the Constitution provided for my breaking the tie vote. And it didn't say just on procedural matters or just on issues of the day. It was whenever the Senate was equally tied. Mm-hmm. I broke the tie vote.
Just as the Vice President of the United States was out of court.
It's a little different because in this case, I was deciding who was President Pro Tem of the Senate. I was deciding who was the chairman of every committee of the Senate. And my belief was the buck's got to stop someplace. Somebody's got to be in charge. And my choice was to put the Republicans in charge.
He'd agree with that.
However, I did listen to the Democrats. Very careful.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
On that point, so you serve as Senate President, unlike the Vice President of the United States, which comes in at critical votes. You're there all the time then.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Evans, I am there every day for the exception of the days that I'm serving as governor. In the days that I'm serving as governor, I can leave if I have a trade mission to go on or if I have some other activity. But generally, the Constitution provides that I'm the president's presiding officer of the Senate, and that's one of my jobs. That's what the Constitution requires. I'm there.
Interesting.
Yes. Just one quick question. What happens if both the governor and lieutenant governor are out of the state?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Gardner, then the President Pro Tem of the Senate becomes the governor. And if he's gone, then the Speaker of the House. If he's gone, the Secretary of State. If he's gone, the Attorney General.
Senator Lim, you don't provide for that succession within your bill. What would happen within this bill if the governor and the lieutenant governor both of us?
I think already in our constitution it provides that the succession when governor is out, but Tom Lim, state senator from district level. I think it's already provided by adding the lieutenant governor becomes the second man for a person in charge.
And if the lieutenant governor was gone, was Mr. Gardner's question, is the governor and the lieutenant governor are both out of the state at the same time?
I think it comes to the Secretary of the State and then the Senate President and the Speaker.
Okay.
Throughout the state. As far as I know.
Lieutenant Governor, do you have bill filing authority?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, no.
Okay.
I guess what I would say is that a citizen in the state of Idaho has bill filing authority. They have to give it through a committee or through a member. I am treated the same as a committee. I'm treated no different than the governor. The governor can send a bill up if the committee wants to introduce it. They can. If they don't want to introduce it, well, based upon its merits, they don't have to.
Mr. Mm-hmm. Barr.
Mr. Chair, and thank you. This is a kind of a different question, but in Idaho, doesn't the legislature have a bill printing committee so that anyone can introduce a bill, but only the bill that the bill printing committee deems worthy to actually make it out?
Mr. Chairman, represented by it, we used to. I always discontinued about 8 or 10 years ago. It used to be a printing committee of the House.
So to clarify then, a lot of riffraff is printed now that would not have before.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Not necessarily.
I guess you could say that almost any bill could get printed. Whether or not it will be heard and whether or not it will manage the succeeding steps of the legislative process depends upon the merits of the bill.
Okay, right. As it well should. Does he definitely get something?
No.
You know, I can understand the... the nature of international relations many times, to be handled carefully, there's a lot of protocol. And I could see where having a high-ranking state official to execute some of these duties and carry out some of the negotiations and meet with people could likely be very beneficial, especially if the governor is tied up elsewhere, say in Washington D.C. or other duties. What are some of the more difficult negotiations you have had to undertake with foreign powers?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, probably the recent, and I say recent, as recent as the last 8 months, when we under the NAFTA legislation. We had products entering the United States from Canada through the northern tier of states, which include Washington, Idaho, Montana, North Dakota, and Minnesota. And these products were coming across the border at 70 miles an hour, whereas products going from the United States into Canada were hitting as many as 2 weeks of delay. And most of these delays were relative to safety checks on trucks and brakes and these sort of things, and they were superficial. And it was pretty obvious that they were superficial. And it was artificial trade barrier at its worst. And it wasn't until, and we could not get the Clinton administration, we could not get the Commerce Department, the United States Commerce Department, to affect at least a dissatisfaction, a registry dissatisfaction with the Canadian government. From the United States. So it wasn't until the states united and the governor of the state of Washington and Idaho and Montana and Wyoming joined in and North Dakota and Minnesota got together and our respective state patrols and port of entry began giving 2-week checks on trucks and air brakes and those sort of things that we finally got everybody's attention. Those are probably the most difficult times. Because the question of a lieutenant governor, or even the question of a governor, in those sort of international trade matters, which actually is an international treaty,
mm-hmm.
whether or not a particular state can affect legally, constitutionally, a duty that is reserved for the federal government, international trade, international agreement. So that was probably, we were probably on shaky ground at best, but it got a high enough profile in the news and got a high enough attention that we finally were able to affect some consideration.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cleaned up yet, but we're well on our way to getting it done that way. Probably the only other area of international trade is when a state finds itself in conflict with the federal government. or the state finds itself disenfranchised in an international marketplace by a policy of the United States Foreign Service or the United States Department of Agriculture. For instance, our sister state of Washington, recently so affected by the delicious apple, and I don't even know the name of the insect that was attending the problem for Japan. But it was not a problem in the state of Washington as it was defined in the Department of Agriculture and the Foreign Service, Foreign Agricultural Service public policies, resulting in the apples not being brought in Japan.
Right.
And it was unfortunate because it cost them dearly, in the marketplace.
Have our relations with, say, Asian and South American countries more difficult than are there more formalities and more ceremonial?
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, it's been my experience that the relationship is twofold. Overall public policy is sort of put in place by the State Department of the federal government, by the United States Department of Agriculture, by the Foreign Agricultural Service, by some agency of the federal government. The actual relationship and the exchange of value for goods is done on the state level. So the relationship is really established person to person at that level. That makes it much more valuable in its relationship. They like dealing with the states. We have sister states in Taiwan. We have sister, as I'm sure the state of Oregon does, we have sister state relationships with states in Mexico, with states in Korea, Japan, city states around the world. And those relationships are much stronger and have a great deal more integrity and respect because it's state to state, so to speak, than federal government to national government.
So the federal government has the overarching framework, and then the actual business transactions are more state to state.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct.
Further questions at this point? I want to thank you for coming, taking time to come over here today, and I appreciate it very much. And you provided some valuable insight for us as to how this could potentially benefit the state of Oregon. Are you available for further questions? I guess your phone number is here in your contact information, so we can get a hold of you.
Mr. Chairman, at the request of my good friend Senator Lim and other folks who are interested in this in the state of Oregon, who expressed their interest to me, their hope, the purpose, the promise that they think this office offers. I would be more than happy to come back at any time or answer the telephone or telex or anything at any time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Governor.
You're welcome. Thank you, members of the committee.
Further questions?
Okay.
So we will then, as seeing all the business of this committee, we will adjourn. Thank you.